Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories, told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on December 3rd, 2013 at the Top Hat. This edition of Tell Us Something features 8 storytellers telling a story based upon the theme, Promises. This week's story comes to us from Andrea Davis and is titled, An Auction Saved Her Life. Thank you for listening.
So I have a slight addiction to auctions. It really serves 3 things for me in my life: charitable giving, competition, and gambling. Add a little alcohol, a little auction, and I'm gonna buy something. So I don't know if Mayor Engen is here, but if you are, Mayor Engen, this is for you, because I bought this at an auction you were auctioneering. It was a few years ago, and I was feeling good, and I bought a week's rental in Baja, Mexico. I needed a vacation. My husband and I were ready to go. It was awesome. We went down to the southern Baja. It was this beautiful home. It was a duplex. We were on the 2nd floor. It was gorgeous. We were on the Pacific Ocean. It was an open-air duplex. It was just gorgeous. It was beautiful. Nothing was as amazing as when we went to the sky deck, to the 3rd floor, which was this open, basically, porch, where we could watch the meteor showers, drink Don Julio tequila, and just listen to the Pacific Ocean. It was phenomenal. So we had a great time. We decided to go over to La Paz, which is over on the Sea of Cortez. We had a long day over there, snorkeling and eating seafood. And we came home to our duplex. We went upstairs, and we went to bed. And in the middle of the night, we got shocked out of bed with this noise that I can't even explain to you what it is. Naturally, we were naked. And we were like, what is that? And so we listened again, and we heard this really weird, eerie, groaning sound. And immediately we thought, oh my God, it's a wild animal. Then we thought, oh my God, we're a couple of whiteys in Mexico. They're actually coming after us. So we listened again, and we could hear some weird muffled noise. Dennison ran into the bathroom and grabbed the plunger handle. And I listened, and I finally heard words, and I heard this woman's voice say, help me, help me. Oh my God, really? So we think, okay, seriously, somebody's baiting us outside, you know, all those weird, like, 48 hours stories that we all watch. Somebody's trying to mug me, that's what I'm thinking. And then I'm thinking, that can't be. I mean, it's a rural part of Mexico, but I don't live with that much fear. That can't be what it is. So then I hear it again, and I hear this woman say, help me, please help me. Oh, my God. Well, at this point, I figured it out because we had a downstairs neighbor. She was American. She was an elderly woman. She lived part-time in Mexico, rented this place. And I hadn't seen her for a few days, and I actually had made that comment. I'm like, that's odd, huh? I haven't seen Betty for a few days. So pretty much we figured it out. We got dressed. I packed a small pocket knife with me down to Mexico, so I grabbed that just in case there was somebody really trying to mug us. And we went down to her unit. And these doors on these units, they lock right away. Well, lo and behold, her unit was open. I couldn't believe it. So we went inside, and there was this older woman laying in between the bed and the wall. And you don't know what to do at first. You know, you're trying to say, are you awake? And she says, help me, help me. So I'm like, okay, we're going to help you. Meanwhile, there is this giant black spider, and I am thinking, oh my God, I'm trying to touch her. I don't want to touch her. There's this big black spider. She's in agony, almost dying. And I'm like, don't move. There's a big black spider. Anyway, the spider ran underneath her body, and I thought, okay, great opportunity to get over my arachnophobia, which I did. So turns out she'd been there for a couple of days. There's breathing machines all over her apartment. She clearly has some pulmonary disease. And it looks like she's been packing. And so there's suitcases and everything's collected, started to be collected. So we're nervous. You know, my husband Dennison is like, I don't know if we should pick her up. What if she broke her neck? What if we break her neck because we pick her up? I'm like, what are we going to do? So we actually call the guy that owns the duplex. He's from Missoula. And his wife is a nurse. And she said, I said, I'm going to call the ambulance. She said, there's nothing else you can do. Just keep doing what you're doing. That was about the extent of the help I got. So I hung up, and we actually got her off the floor carefully and got her on the bed. Her breathing is so labored. I mean, I don't know what it's like to have a pulmonary disease or not get oxygen into your body, but it's scary. And she looked like she was dying to me. She was shaking. She was trembling. I was trying to get water into her. I found an inhaler. And fortunately, we had Wi-Fi, so I was able to Wi-Fi the hospital. I somehow recognized the name of the hospital when we were in town, and I called them. Well, you know, no habla español. And no habla inglés on the other side of the phone. But they were able to tell me in broken English that there is no ambulance at 5 o'clock in the morning. If she was going to the hospital, we were taking her to the hospital. So we're like, what do we do? We're taking her to the hospital, right? So I'm telling her, I'm like, Betty, I promise you are going to be okay. And she's like, my cat, right? This cat's like wrapping itself around my legs. I told her, I promise your cat's going to be okay. So I stuck that cat in a crate, had a crate, thank God, stuck that cat in the crate. And Dennison is driving our tiny little sedan like up over lawn furniture or whatever he had to get it up to the three-step porch that we had to walk her down to get into the car. And meanwhile, I'm grabbing all of her stuff. So I have her purse, her wallet, her cell phone, and more medications than I've seen anybody have in my life. I mean, fortunately, we're not pill poppers. I've never seen so much oxycodone in my life. And Mexican drugs, right? Because when you're in Mexico, you can get all sorts of prescription drugs. But I put it all in this bag, thinking the doctor's going to want to know. So I've got a bag of drugs like this. And then I'm thinking, awesome. You know, what if we get pulled over? Sweet. You know, but anyway, we don't. So we're driving down a washboard road. We're miles outside of town. We get to the emergency room. The two doctors there don't speak English. We got her in. We got her on two machines. It took a while. I mean, it wasn't looking good. And she was so dehydrated, it took them a long time to get an IV in her arm. And I looked in the room, and there's this pool of blood on the floor. It's not like the emergency rooms here, right? I mean, we were the only people in the hospital, first of all. And second of all, I could poke my head in there occasionally to see what was going on. So eventually she's stabilized enough, and she's conscious. And she says, I said, I have your purse. And she doesn't know who I am at all. And she said, only give them my Medicare card. And I said, okay. So I wrote down all the medications, and I was, like, ready to rock and roll. And finally, the hospital administrator comes in, and I give him the card, and we try to start processing information, and we figure out she's supposed to fly home to Montana tomorrow, the next day. Well, that's not happening. So he was able to call the airline and get that all postponed, and we sat around for a while, and basically he said, well, go ahead and go home, and I'll call you. And I'm thinking, I'm not a relative, I'm not a friend. You know, he kept trying to figure out what our relationship was to this woman. There isn't one. We're a stranger. We just happen to be there. And so, lo and behold, I get a phone call a couple hours, and he tells me that she's been stabilized. And I'm like, okay, good. And then I'm like, I have her cell phone. I guess I'll just put everything back in her room for the time being. And I get a phone call from another phone call. Her phone rings, and I answer. And it's her friend. It's an expat that also lives down in Baja, Mexico. And I explain who I am, and she said, oh, I wondered why she didn't show up yesterday for lunch. And I'm like, okay, well, she's in the hospital. So the friend goes, checks in with her, and a couple hours later, she comes out to the house, the duplex that we're staying in. And she tells me that Betty's been stabilized, but she's got an enlarged heart, and she's got water in her lungs, and, you know, it's not looking so good for her. She asked her friend to pick up some things, so toothbrush and some change of clothes and her dentures, which we did find in the sink, and the cat. So we loaded that all up in the car, and I asked the friend, I'm like, who can I call? What can I do? And she said, you can't do anything. There's nobody. She's alone. And I thought, wow, you know, she's down here in Mexico. She's got this friend, but there's really nobody else to call. And that was it. I never heard from Betty again. The American neighbors next door, who were not home, by the way, that they were supposed to be at our beck and call during an emergency, weren't home that night, told us that they saw her packing a couple days before we left. But that was it. I never actually saw her again. And I had this weird hollow feeling like there should be some closure when you go through an event like that with somebody. And then I realized, you know, I promised her that I would help her, and I promised her that we would save her life. And we did. And that's closure enough. Thank you.
Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. Thanks to the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge. Bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years, the Top Hat now serves food and offers, in addition to great music, comedy shows, film, and performance art. TopHatLounge.com. Jonathan Marquis. Jonathan Marquis is an artist and human in Missoula, Montana. Learn more about him and his art at SubjectToGravity.com. That's Subject, the number 2, Gravity.com. Matt LaRubio, screen printing and graphic design. Learn more about Matt and what he has to offer at RanchHandDesign.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people, RockinRudy's.com. And thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcasts, and to the storytellers, Gregory T. Johnson, Susie Risho, Samuel Jackson Enemy Hunter, Stephanie Wing, Taj Chellen, John Engen, Amy Rosendahl, Andrea Davis, and Michael Marsalek. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. The next Tell Us Something is scheduled for February 11th at the Top Hat. The theme is, What Are You Waiting For? The official Tell Us Something site is tellussomething.org. Thank you again for your support and your interest in live storytelling and local art here in Missoula, Montana.